listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, all, and welcome to Get Yourself the Job with Brandon Maslin and Jennifer Hill. It's going to be a little different today because it's with Brandon Maslin only. Jennifer Hill is doing her part-time job, I'm pretty sure, which is traveling the world. I like to play a game of my daughter loves Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, and I play Where in the World is Jennifer Hill. I believe she's in Cancun. I'm not sure if I'm positive on that one, but we wish her the best, and I believe her birthday celebration continues. So she'll be back with us next week. To get us started, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Markham Search. Markham is a preeminent search firm. Actually, funny enough, me and Jennifer met while I was working at Markham Search, so I cut my teeth there, and it was a great experience. They combine forces with a lot of other industries, and some of the best recruiters I know in the world work at Markham. If you have a job search need, by all means, I would highly recommend you reaching out to them because they will help you find that job. So today, we're really lucky. We have Kristen Major. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Kristen. I know her really well. I'm going to read off my little document here, but she's the SVP, our Senior Vice President of Human Resources at Aruba, which is a Hewlett-Packard company. I know it sounds like a Beach Boys song, but it's basically, she can tell you more about it, but it's in almost every office building in the world, this product. Before that, she was actually a Senior Vice President and Deputy General Counsel of Global Functions and Global Security and Aviation, not a cool title, at Hewlett-Packard. Before that, she was counsel at a small little firm, that's a joke, called Skadden Arps, doing labor and employment. She got her JD at Georgetown University, who thought we would do better in the tournament, and went to my wife's alma mater, University of Arizona, so bear down. She's a friend. She's a confidant. She's someone I've known for years, and I've mentioned it many times, but we used to do these lunches at the old organization I was with, and my favorite, sorry, everyone, but my favorite were absolutely these Palo Alto lunches with people who've known each other for years, and we get together in a brief moment in the day and just have these safe, powerful, incredible conversations that gave me hope for the future of corporate America and inspired me as a human. So with that introduction, I'll turn it over to Kristen. Thank you for joining us, Kristen.
Hey, Brandon. It's great to be here. It's an honor.
It's an honor to have you. Thank you. We were just talking that we haven't caught up in a while, and so this will be a fun way to catch up.
Exactly. And I did say that you're one of the only people who could say, hey, you want to join me on a podcast in like 10 minutes? I'd be like, sure, no problem.
So I think I gave you a week's notice, but that's
yeah, you did. But you didn't send me the link.
That's right. I forgot to send you the link. That's on me. This is why I need Jennifer to keep me straight. No, you're amazing, and I thank you. And I know how busy you are, so I really appreciate it. Why don't you explain – actually, let's start here because I'd like you to explain a little bit of about where you work currently. I mean, it's a Hewlett-Packard company, but what does it do? What does it stand for?
Right. No, thank you. And yes, and it's like I said, it's always wonderful to see you, and I'm really happy to be here. So I work at Aruba Networking, which is a wireless networking company. So it's very, very helpful to have wireless networking now, especially in today's environment. So we have a lot of great customers all over the world. We sell to private enterprise. We sell to education. We have retail stores. So basically, that is what we do. We keep people connected. We are wireless at the edge. So, and it's part of Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, which is the bigger company that I've worked for almost going into 10 years. So started as a lawyer. As you mentioned, I was at Skadden Arps, a New York-based law firm, but I was out here in California for about another 10-11 year stint doing labor and employment, M&A transactions, executive comp, and then went in-house, as many lawyers decide to do. I did a little bit later in my career, stayed around at Skadden for a little bit longer. And then was doing labor and employment at Hewlett-Packard. And then Hewlett-Packard split in 2015 and became Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, which I say is green HPE, the green logo. And that's where I ended up, as opposed to blue round HP, which is the printers and computers and a lot more of the consumer products that people think of. So in 2015, HPE acquired Aruba, which was its own public company at that point, a smaller, but still very, very good. And yeah, acquired that. And then in about a year ago, I moved over to the HR side. So been doing labor and employment law for a long time, but just decided that it might be a good time to switch over and get a little bit closer to the business.
So can you talk about that journey? I mean, the show is Get Yourself the Job, and you know, you got yourself a real unique job. You went from being one of the senior most legal leaders in all of Hewlett Packard, one of the biggest companies in the world, and made a pivot to not only a newer acquisition for Hewlett Packard or HPE, but you know, really that transition in your career. So can you talk about what motivated you? Were you always drawn to human resources? I've known you for years. I will say this as a caveat. One of my favorite legal teams of all time was yours. And it's that humanity that's in that room, not lawyers, but we don't always connect on that really human level, and yours did. So can you talk to that journey?
Yeah, no, that's it is an interesting journey. And I think, you know, obviously I'm, you know, living in my world, so it seems normal to me, but I get a lot of questions about that. And, you know, why did I do that? I think this is actually a testament to having great mentors, great sponsors, and supporters in your company, because it is one of those things where after being in the legal department for quite some time and having a number of different jobs, you know, even though I was working as an attorney, able to lead some large teams of both lawyers and non-lawyers. By the time I moved over to HR, I was leading our global security group. That was probably something I never thought I would do. I was leading our aviation group, which was also something I never thought I'd do. So I think, you know, every time my then boss would say, I think that, you know, he had a good way of saying it, I think you should do this and take this on. And I would say, sure, yes. And that was kind of my answer. Okay, this sounds like something I want to do. And it always worked out. And whether it was leading larger teams, having larger budgets, you know, just different clients, it was a great opportunity. So I have always been, I guess I would say my core profession has always been labor and employment law. I like people. I like the law, obviously. I'm very interested in this. I've always been interested in how that interacts. There's lots of different types of law. You and I, Brandon, because you are also an attorney by training. I mean, we've talked about all the different types of law we wouldn't want to do, but labor and employment has always interested me, probably from the time I was in law school. I took a lot of classes in this area. This was just something I could really see myself doing. But I always told people that if I hadn't gone to law school, I would have gone into HR, because it just seemed like something I was interested in. So always kept close to the HR community. They were my clients, worked very closely with them. And then again, my boss said, you know, I don't want you to necessarily leave legal. I will miss you. And, you know, but is this something that you would want to do? Because this might be the next step in your growth as an attorney, as an executive, as a professional. And it turns out it has, because it's been a very big and exciting challenge for me.
And just for the audience members who aren't aware, something you said in the mail there, labor employment, can you tell what that means? I mean, I know obviously it's a great segue. I think it's a necessity for most general counsels or AGCs, but also that why it's such a good segue into HR.
Right, right. So basically just dealing with all the laws and regulations and policies around employment. So how we treat our employees, how we pay our employees, you know, our compensation schemes, our wage and hour schemes, everything dealing with our employees, our anti-discrimination laws that we have in this country and then around the world, union issues, works councils issues, if you're outside the US, you know, trade unions, all of the different things that affect and impact employment of our employees. That's really what labor and employment law does. And it's at the highest levels. So you're dealing with sometimes with executive, you know, compensation matters and severance and hiring and firing and all the way down to, you know, rank and file employees and claims, whether it's discrimination, sexual harassment, wage and hour issues, all sorts of things. So it's a really interesting area. And it's an area, as you probably knows, everybody probably knows, that keeps developing. The law here keeps expanding. So it's interesting to keep up with it. And then, but basically when you can be the lawyer, the labor and employment lawyer, but your clients are really the HR professionals, because they're the people dealing with the employees and, you know, making sure that employees are productive and happy and safe and things are, you know, things are working the way they should. So Anyway, but that's, so that's really what it is. It's getting close to your clients, and it's going from being the lawyer to being the actual client in the business, working with employees.
So let me ask you this. I love what you talked about with labor employment being a conduit for the laws, right? Mm-hmm. And we're living in a time where companies are getting in trouble or not getting in trouble. And I think we're living in a time where people are more sensitive mm-hmm. to how they're showing up. So yeah. What have you seen as an evolution even in the way organizations are dealing with these laws or labor employment or and our employees? And let's make it about get yourself the job. What do people need to know to get hired in companies or to stay mm-hmm. in companies around these sort of changing ways?
I think it's a really good question. I think it used to be when I started my career in labor and employment, it was more like, the question was more about what was legal and what was not legal, or what had risk and what doesn't have risk. And I think the way that the world is moving right now, at least here in the United States, which I think is a good thing, is that even if it's not illegal, even if there isn't necessarily a lot of risk attached to it, some things are just not advisable and they're not good. And they're not the way we want our employees to be treated at companies. And they're not the way we want to show up as employers. And I think we're seeing this, particularly in the last year with COVID, with a lot of the activism going on, with some of the terrible things that we've seen in this country, and our employees are speaking up, and our employees want to be treated in a certain way, which is understandable and right and fair and equitable. And I think that's where it's moving. So I think for a lawyer, it's no longer okay or sufficient to say, well, this is allowed, this is legal, this is without risk, this has some risk. You know, you balance the options. This is really more about how employers treat their employees and how they're perceived by their customers and by their employees and by their communities, frankly. And I think there's a lot more expectation that employers are going to step up and do the right thing, regardless of the legal ramifications. So I think that's been really exciting and interesting for me. And that's been great in the sense for the last year, because I've been in the HR world where, you know, it's not so much, obviously we have to be compliant and we want to do things legally and correct, but it's also about how we want to treat our employees and how we want to make our employees feel like this is a really wonderful place to work and this is where I want to be. Because that's how you hold on to employees. You
know, so what makes a really wonderful place to work? Tell me that. Like what, in your opinion, what makes where you work, even using Aruba, but in general, what makes a great place to work or what makes it not such a great place to work if you're so inclined?
Right. I think there's a couple of components. One of the things I like to talk about is the fact that, you know, it's obviously about, and this often comes down to it, about people, what you pay people. And obviously you want to be competitive, and certain companies have reputation for paying more or paying less. So obviously you want to treat people well and you want to compensate them well. But there's also more than just money, I think. There's also people's career aspirations and what they want to do with, you know, the rest of their working lives, and how can they do that at your company. So I think giving people the understanding that this is a career and that they have the ability to move forward and to develop and to gain new skills and to, you know, get that promotion and to keep working at this company and keep doing well, I think is really important. So it is about money, but it can be about titles and that kind of thing, but it's really also about giving people that opportunity to develop themselves at the company and feel like they're really growing. And then obviously it's also about providing a great work environment for people, you know, being supportive, letting people, you know, take care of the things they need to take care of in their lives. And I think with COVID this year, we've seen that it's been particularly difficult. So I think that, you know, giving people that balance, or at least trying to, giving that people those, that compassion and understanding that, you know, you're an employee, yes, but you're also, you have a family, you have a life, you have parents, you have things you need to do. You're a, you know, dog parent, you need to take care of things. So I think that's really important too, bringing that humanity.
What are some of the challenges you've seen with COVID this year that have sort of affected, you know, especially, I mean, what I noticed early on in COVID was people in human resources and lawyers were the ones that seemed the most stressed to me. And I think that's because they were dealing with people, right? And you're both. So you're the.
Yes.
So, you know, what did you notice? Or has it been stressful for you?
Yeah. It has been very stressful. It has been very, very stressful. I think just the not knowing, Brandon, that was the crazy thing. Obviously, we know so much more now, and there's so much more hope because of the vaccine rollouts. And I live here in Northern California, and I watch it closely. I'm concerned. I want everyone to get vaccinated. Obviously, people have choices, but I think it would be wonderful as many people as possible could do that, and we could return to some sort of semblance of normal life. I think people are craving connection. I think work provided great connections for people, particularly those of us who at least part of the time were in an office. Here in Silicon Valley, a lot of people were in offices, you know, campuses. We had lovely buildings. I think people were getting a lot of their emotional support, and just frankly, a lot of their, you know, their support system was at work, and that was like ripped away, you know, in March of last year. And we just didn't know when it was going to come back. So I think that's been a loss for people. There's definitely been a loss.
Let's talk about something you said in the front end of that, because you're sort of circling back with that. There was the uncertainty, but you mentioned the word hope. That's been coming up a lot lately for me and in different ways. What is the importance of hope? I mean, you know, it's a great example, right? We do have the show is dedicated in large part to finding that next big job. And that, as we've said many times, can be at a new company, can be at your own company, as Kristen's story certainly attests, right? But what is the importance of hope playing in one's career? Or having hope? And what have you seen when someone maybe loses hope and how that affects one's career or getting a new job or the great job that they want?
I think that's a very important component. I think there is a sense of hope and optimism that is really important for people to have. I think going back to what we were talking about with COVID, I think in a way, because it was so uncertain and we just didn't know what was going on and it kept dragging on, that took away people's hope and optimism in some ways. And I think we're getting that back. But I think you're right. I mean, and I've seen it in my own career with people I've worked with at my company and other companies. It's almost like once you like kind of lose faith in your company, in yourself at that company, in your job, it's hard to get that back. You know, it's hard to see yourself continuing on and growing and being promoted there. I've certainly seen that with people I've worked with where it's just, you know, and sometimes people like that end up leaving the company and going someplace else because you need to kind of do the fresh start and do the reset. But I think hope is very, very important. And I think it's something that we all need. And it's truly been a huge part of my career. You know, I think I've always just thought, well, there's something, the next thing is out there. And I'm looking forward to it. And I think that's, you know, it's worked for me.
Yeah. So actually, can we talk about that? Let's talk about that for a second. So how does one find that next thing, right? I mean, you're a great example of that, going from scatting, going to HP, going into Aruba, pivoting in your career in multiple ways, right? I mean, going from right? How does one pivot? What do people do? I mean, hope is tied into that idea of being stuck. I'm sure there were moments in your careers where you felt stuck.
Yeah.
What do we do to make sure we're constantly evolving or at least trying to?
Right. And you're talking to someone here who is not, I am not the quickest pivoter. I'm sort of the decade pivoter. No, by Silicon Valley standards, like I'm just like, I am stuck in one place for, I tend to do every 10 years, at least it seems like. But no, I think that's important to think that. And for me, when I went from being a traditional big law firm lawyer into in-house, I just felt this really strong desire to do something different. Like it wasn't necessarily I knew what I wanted to do, but my internal dialogue was saying, I need to do something different. I've had a good run here, but this is not what I want to spend the rest of my career. And I adored my colleagues at Skadden. I work for some great people there. I had some great clients and they all know this because I stay in touch with them. But it was time. It was time to do something. And I remember I was walking, I was working in the Palo Alto office and I was walking around outside and I was thinking, I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but I need to do something else. And it was just that sort of internal, but it took me a while, you know, because it's scary when you have you're in a good place. And, you know, I had two little kids at the time, and now they're much bigger kids. I have a kid in college and a senior in high school, but I just thought, well, okay, what am I going to do? You know, so, but that's been, you know, and that's part of the reason, Brandon, you know, that awe, and when I met you, it's been really helpful for me to have kind of that sounding board and someone to listen to you and say, yeah, you're right to be thinking this. And that makes sense. You should take that seriously, and you should look for the next thing. And then I think when it comes the next time when I pivoted and moved to HR from the in-house, I was loving my career in-house. I really was. I love Hewlett Packard. I love Hewlett Packard Enterprise. It's a great company. It's a place that I feel very at home, and I'm very inspired by, and I'm very excited to be part of. But it was almost like, again, I was thinking, what is the next thing I'm going to do? Because I don't think I'm going to be able to, you know, I'm not going to be excited and hopeful and optimistic about doing this necessarily for the rest of my career. So it's just, and that time I had sort of more of an external influence, you know, telling me this is what we think you should do. And I thought, yeah, that actually makes sense.
Well, that's a good question, right? So, I mean, what I'm hearing there is that you had some sponsors along the way, you know, you had some mentors, some sounding boards mm-hmm. as well. And so can you talk a little bit about that then on the journey? You know, I think it sounds a lot of times people will say, we don't want to lose you, but would you like to do this, right? That definition of a sponsor, that person who's going to do something for you, the mentor who's going to be that sounding board. You know, I'm honored to play the coach role, which is just like, Kristen, you're amazing. Go be amazing. but what is the importance of a sponsor in your case, I think, but mentors as well, if they came along.
Right. No, I think that the mentor sponsor relationship, and particularly the sponsor in mine, is and mentors too at Hewlett Packard Enterprise I've had along the way. It's different. Yeah. Different from the coach role, obviously, which that is very valuable in and of itself. It's the idea of someone who's going to be really honest with you, but they'll say up front, and I've said this too, now that I've kind of tried to take on that role of mentoring and sponsoring others, is like, this is my impression, this is my opinion, this is my sense of you and your career, but you know, I could be wrong, I'm not, you're the one living this, so but this is what I'm sensing. And this idea that, you know, and asking the hard questions too, you know, the in particular when my former boss, who I'm very close to, asked me like, well, what do you want to do? Like, what's your ultimate goal? And it makes you actually have to think about that and think, okay, well, and even if you don't know exactly, it's like, well, what are you thinking? What are you leaning toward? And I think that was super helpful. So I think it's someone to ask those questions and also give you sort of an honest assessment of whether you can do it at this company, whether you need to go do it someplace else, whether you need to find a different trajectory, something. I think it is that honesty and that transparency that is really, really helpful in a mentor-sponsor relationship. Because just telling people what they want to hear or what you think they want to hear, that's not really helpful. And I don't think it doesn't get the results that obviously we're all looking for, and which is to grow our career and, you know, get to that place where we want to be.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this in our last podcast, and I love that we're doing like an HR month, if you will. And I love that you, and we got the best of the best, and you're one of them.
Oh, thank you.
It's true. And one of the reasons that I've noticed from the best of the best, whether it's Amy or Paul, and in your case, you hit back on the cycle of trust, mm-hmm. right? That you got to have trust. So to say the hard thing, you got to have trust with someone because, you know, when it goes wrong, it can go really wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this has been a theme with all the great HR leaders we've met. Is having trust and being reciprocal. How does an employee gain trust from their sort of managers or leaders, and how can they lose trust?
That's a very good question. So, I mean, just speaking from my experience with managing people, managing teams over the years, so I actually really feel like attitude is so much of it. I've actually said this recently. Yeah, it's attitude. I look back at it and I look at, sometimes I ask myself, okay, so why was I successful in a big law firm for as long as I was? And I think it was I the best lawyer? Probably not. Did I work the most hours of anybody? Definitely not. Cause I worked with some people that I think never went home, but I think, you know, it's about attitude and it's about taking things on, being willing and just, you know, people want to, when your manager is giving you something or giving you a challenge or a project or an opportunity, they want to feel like you're excited about it and you're ready and you're happy. And I'm not saying you have to be grateful, but just, you know, just to be receptive to it. I think a lot of times, you know, you can get into this terrible loop with employees in your team where you feel like it's like you're oppressing them by asking them to do things. And then it's bad. You know, you just feels like there's not trust there. But you want to be able to say, okay, I'm going to give you this and I know it's going to be hard, but I'm here and you can come back and ask any questions and I will give you help and support and that's okay. But you just want to have that openness and that trust. Otherwise it just gets awkward and weird and just not as productive. So I really do think it's attitude and just willingness to take on new things and, you know, people being open to experiences and opportunities.
And so I think that must transition really nicely to getting hired. Having that, showing that attitude in the interview process. I know you've probably hired a few people. Yeah. Can you talk about the importance of attitude in getting hired? And I suppose because we're on the topic on getting promoted as well.
Yeah. No, I think the attitude is very important. I think coming in, and I'm not saying that everybody needs, you want to bring your authentic self to work, as we always say, or to the interview. You don't want to, obviously you don't want to pretend to be somebody else. If you're not a super enthusiastic person, that's okay. That's fine. Everybody has their own strengths and their own personality, but I think you do want to bring energy to an interview. You want to show that you're excited about, and you see the value and the opportunity here. You know, there's never anything worse than when you ask somebody like, why are you interested in working for this company? And it's like, you know, it's, you're close to my house. I don't know. Yeah. So no, I think that you just, if you have to have a reason, and I think people really want to hear that. And so I think it's bringing that, what I like, I'm just saying now, is energy, as opposed to necessarily like, you know, the biggest enthusiastic personality. That is not required, but bringing that energy and that openness and that excitement. I think people really want to see that. And I'll say particularly in companies where, you know, we do cool things at Aruba and we have cool customers and, you know, we're making the world run and it's great and it's exciting and it's great to be a part of it. And so you want people who are going to reflect that energy and that optimism, I think. It's, you know, we got to sell it here.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me of a mutual friend of ours, like Jennifer Miller, you know, who works at Loon, and Loon's obviously, you know, is paying attention to news, may not be around, but you couldn't find a better ambassador for the company in the world besides her, maybe my buddy who does their marketing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's such a good point that you want, I like that word ambassador. You want to hire people that are going to be ambassadors for your brand. Mm-hmm. And if they don't even know why they're showing up day one, you know, that's a problem. Yeah. You know, I mean, being close to your house, having spent all the time in LA, I appreciate that logic. But
yeah, it makes sense. But
that mission,
there's
though,
something more.
There is. You know, one thing I noticed with you in particular, at least with your legal team, is you created a great culture and a great culture of transparency and honesty. What makes a great culture, not for a company, but for a team?
That's good. That's a good question. And I'm not sure I know exactly, but I know kind of what I do that works and what I do that doesn't work. And I've, you know, you always have some failings too. So, I think it is an honesty. Obviously I like people. I want to make people happy. I want to make people feel good. I don't like necessarily delivering bad news, but it's funny, Brandon, because despite that personality trait that I have, I'm in a profession where basically that's all I have to deliver bad news all the time. So, or, you know, it's like people who say, oh, I don't like confrontation, but like I have confrontation all the time in my job. And so do I love it? Do I crave it? No, but can I do it? Yes. And I think it is about taking a deep breath and being calm and being transparent with people. And I think that's what the culture, it goes back to what you said about trust. I think it's about trust. You know, I say, I will level with you and you will level with me and we will get through this together. And we are a team. And this is a shared burden that we have here or a shared opportunity. And we will do this together. So I think the culture I've always tried to build with my teams, and it's always a work in progress, is that we're all in this together. This is for the greater good, and you know, make people or help people understand what they're working for and why it matters. So even today, I was just thinking about something. One of my team members did something that was great, but he always does things that are great. But I instead of just saying, "Oh, this is great," I basically told him why I thought this was great and how it mattered in the greater scheme of what we were trying to solve. And the fact that all this work that he did was really just, it was more than just, okay, we got a good outcome. This is like a very meaningful, and it took a little longer and it took a little more thought and a little more energy, but I think it was really meaningful for him. And I think that people need to hear that, you know, what they're doing is part of this greater thing that we're doing all together as a team.
Yeah, you know, that idea of transparency, and what I'm hearing is also providing feedback and mm-hmm. something greater than ourselves. Those are kind of the thematics I hear running through. Mm-hmm. I'm very big on when a culture is broken, transparency is gone usually, or that's the first thing you need to repair mm-hmm. is open, honest dialogues. I liked when you talked about greater than ourselves. So we've been asking this question of everyone. I want to ask it of you. So in your very general opinion, what is the key to someone getting hired? What gets people fired? And what gets them promoted?
Okay. Interesting. All right. Let's take hired first. So I think hired, going back to, is attitude, some level of enthusiasm for what you want to do, and a willingness to just embrace the opportunity. So to make it clear, like, look, even if you don't have the, and this is, I mentor a lot of women who are, you know, are executives or want to be executives. And, you know, we've talked about this a lot, Brandon, that a lot of women will say, well, I don't necessarily think I should apply for this job because I don't meet every one of these qualifications. Well, okay. No, you should apply for this job, and you can be upfront and say, okay, well, I don't have so much experience here, but this is where I do have experience, and just showing a willingness to take that on, and you know, to basically say, look, I'm all in on this, and you know, I think I'm the right person for the job for this. So I think for me, it's really is about attitude. It's about coming in with a positive energy and just saying this is why I want to be here. Because you really, at the end of the day, you really want people who want to be there. It makes work so much more pleasant. Don't you think? I mean, it does for me. So
I know it absolutely does. I mean, attitude is, well, you're right, because attitude affects everyone. So if you have someone who has a negative, you get fired. But you know, when there's a positive attitude, someone who is engaging and positive, it's hard. It's contagious. It really is. It gets you motivated and gets you inspired.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter what level you are. I mean, I have junior members of my team who are, you know, right out of school and in entry level and very, you know, very junior. And it's wonderful. The enthusiasm. I mean, you just see them. They're stars. You know, not, you know, it's like great. It's contagious. It's wonderful to have that attitude. And it affects everybody, I think, in the team. So
I'm going to take an assumption here, which, you know, it happens when you do that. But so is the reverse true? Is that why people get fired, in your opinion? Because they do the opposite of that. That's what I warn my leader. And you probably know this about me. But I tell everyone, I'm like, you know, if you stand for your values, if you create a great culture, one of the benefits and, you know, pain points is it's going to let people know who belong and let the people know the people who don't belong know too. And those people are going to cause a lot of trouble for you on the way out the door a lot of times, unless you let them go sooner. So what's your theory on the whole, you know, I'm sure it's not your favorite part of any job, but when people are getting fired.
No. And I mean, you know, obviously from the legal side, I've ended up having to do that quite a bit, but mostly for kind of bad things, you know. So there are some very obvious things you're going to get fired for. But when it comes to just what I would call, and which is I think where you're going, sort of the bad fit kind of thing, where somebody's just, it's not working, you know, this is just, you know, sometimes I've heard people say bad hire, bad fit, just, it's just not gelling. I don't think it's always that. I think sometimes the person might've been a good hire and might've been a great fit, but just it's gone, you know, that changed, you know, something happened. They lost the confidence. They lost the optimism. They have no hope. They don't believe anymore. It's just, it's not there. So, and I have seen that. And my view is when I sense that people are not happy and it's more than just a temporary thing. Cause obviously in the last year, we've all had lots of moments probably where we've not been happy, and not fulfilled, and, you know, work's been very, very hard, and lots of things have been very, very hard. But, so there's the sort of the temporary situation, but then if you have this more of this kind of just constant, not happiness, not content, not feeling the hope, not feeling the positive attitude, or my daughter who's in high school would say the good vibes. I think if you sense that, I'm sort of a, as you know, I'm sort of an empath. And so I can, mm-hmm. I can definitely, even through Zoom, I can feel it when people are kind of like not there. And if that goes on for a while, it's just, you know, then you think, okay, but as I like to say, you know, it's work. It's not indentured servitude. There's other jobs, you know, people can move on. And it's funny when people quit, you know, sometimes, you know, people obviously figure this out and they decide to go. Thankfully, most of the time you don't need to like push them out the door. They kind of figure this out and they know that it's time to move on. You know, I have people tell me all the time, or, you know, when it's happened before over my career, going back, it's, you know, I'm sorry, you know, it's not you. It's like a breakup, you know, I don't take it that way. I say, you need to find you. You need to find what makes you happy. And if this isn't making you happy anymore, this isn't fulfilling you, and it's not a temporary thing, it's not something that we're going to get through, then that's fine. It's, you know, it's good. And I always say, you know, I try to part on the best circumstances. And I say, I'll always be a fan. And, you know, if you need anything, let me know. And, you know, we part friends. But I think sometimes people just need to go find what makes them happy.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, I always say it's my lawyer brain, and yours is a legal recruiter. It's mm-hmm. Don't tell me what you want. Tell me what you don't want. I mean, sometimes there's something right. about the role is just not what you want. And that's okay. Yeah. That doesn't make the person bad or the job bad. It just means it's not for you. And that's the sooner you come to that realization. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to be realistic about your company too. I mean, this is, there's a lot to be said for this, but it, you know, depending on your industry, depending on your location, depending on your market cap, depending on your compensation structure, there's going to be certain things that maybe aren't possible, and that's okay. But if that's really important to you, go find it, you know, and I'll help.
So let's, and then the last part of this question is, when you've promoted people in your career,
yes.
or when you see, and just generally right now, they're the head of HR, I'm sure a lot of the promotions come across mm-hmm. your desk. Mm-hmm. Which is a good sort of insight now too, which is, you know, why do you promote people? Why do you see people just getting promoted more generally at your company?
Right. I think the idea of people getting promoted is it's those people who, again, it goes back, I think, to the attitude, to the willingness to learn new things, to take things on. I mean, because the idea with promotion is that you're not standing in one place. You're moving forward, and you're taking more on, and you're getting more, you're taking more opportunities, and you're leading teams, and maybe you're becoming a manager. So you're growing. So you don't, it's not like a conveyor belt, you know, you don't just stay in one place and you move through the promotion ranks, but you have to be in a growth mode. So I see those people who are in a growth mode who are, and generally, again, I hate to keep saying it, but it comes back to a lot about attitude and willingness to take things on and to welcome those opportunities to learn new things. And, you know, it's those people who say yes, for the most part, who end up getting promoted. And you can kind of see it when people are just, you know, things are working and they're excited to be there, and they want to be there, and they want to grow, and they're excited about the company. So, like I said, it doesn't mean we're happy every day, and doesn't mean you're always like perfectly content with your company, because there is no perfect company. There's no perfect job, but I think it's people who really want to progress and really want to grow. And, you know, just, I think that's really what it is, that attitude.
You bring up a beautiful point that I haven't thought about, though, that, you know, I hear a lot from leaders, brilliant leaders that oversee thousands of people, and they'll say, well, I just always got tapped on the shoulder. Or in your case, the word you used was like, hey, just say yes. But all those things are an action from someone else towards you. And what I'm hearing from you today is the thematic is you've got to be someone that people want to tap on the shoulder. You've got to be someone that people want to ask you a question that you can say yes to. And the best way to display that is that earnestness, that cantuitiveness, or, you know, this ability to exude, you know, give it to me. I use it in social situations. If, you know, especially when we were younger, if you asked that a friend four times and, you know, it was always funny on the fifth time, they would get upset. It's like, we asked you four, you know, we don't like to waste our time on a fifth. And so that's right. And I think that's so important to what you're talking about, is to get yourself in a position, show up every day.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, I'm all for it. Go for it. Ask for it. Get what you deserve. But it's equally great to just be tapped. It's easier to get tapped in the shoulder and say yes. And, you know, and I know as much as this a roll at Aruba, this was something that people came to and said, we want you to do this. And luckily you said yes. Yeah. I remember talking to you about it and thought,
I said yes, and I'm very glad I did, because it's been an amazing experience. I was telling one of my colleagues that the other day. It's been a, you know, she was asking, and she said, this must have been a tough year to jump over and move into HR, because you're going and you're on the front lines basically. And I said, yeah, but this is one of the best jobs I've ever had. I'm super excited about it. I'm thrilled about it. In fact, that's why I think one of the reasons I've been getting a little, like a lot of us, impatient lately with, you know, I want to get back in it. I want to travel again. I want to see people. I want to go back to the office and, you know, interact with colleagues directly, which would be great. So I'm looking forward to that. I really am. That's part of the hope that I have right now, and that we can get that for all of our employees.
And I think you will. And I think it's going to come back. And I still remember that conversation we had. I think it was one of the last trainings I ever did at all. And we were sitting in the room, and it was me and Jamie and you. And then before we talked to the whole group, and that hope you had for this role, and to hear that come to fruition. I think so often hope isn't blind. Hope is real, and it's clarity. And what I'm hearing is, you know, that when people come back, this great role, this great company is going to be even greater. I think that's true for so many companies. And if you're not wanting to get back in the office, you're probably in the wrong company, you know, to some degree. I'm all for work at home as much as possible. That being said,
absolutely.
My point is, if you don't want to go in ever again, there's probably something wrong. I mean,
I am very excited to go in. I am happy though, Brandon, with the kind of the shift that a lot of companies have made on my own to more of a hybrid working model, and we call it edge to office. It's one of our taglines. I think it's really helpful to give people that flexibility, because that is one thing as, and I know you're a parent too, as a mom, it's, you know, it's tough. There's a lot of things going on. Even at my kid's age now, you know, it's still, there's a lot of meetings and sports and stuff and things you have to do. And we're doing the college thing right now too with my daughter. So it's, you know, college applications. So there's a lot, and people have lives, and, you know, work needs to accommodate that and understand that. So.
Yeah, this is something I talk a lot about in my work with professional identity, which is, you know, you want to be in a company that wants all of you. I love the evolving workforce, because I think we've made people choose for too long, parent work, life work, and it shouldn't be that way. And this next generation is not going to tolerate it. This next generation wants to bring all of themselves.
Right.
And very smart organizations are going to create structures where they can do that.
Right.
Because why would you want part of someone when you can get all of someone?
Right.
But historically, it's been like, we just want this piece, leave everything else at home.
No,
yeah.
And it's, for so long, it's disadvantaged women primarily, I think. And that's really bothered me. But also, it also men too. And people who just, you know, want to bring their whole selves to work and be authentic and, you know, demonstrate other things in their life that they care about, which I think makes people interesting and makes me want to work with them. So.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking a pretty strong. I don't know, and not surprisingly, in my world, even as a feminist, a lot of my friends are lawyers. Most of the dads are, you know, pulling a lot of weight, and it's just, you know, there's that. I just love the way that society is trying to evolve, right?
Yeah.
You know, and especially I left all, and I started my own company, and COVID hit, and my wife was doing great at Pinterest. She's now doing even greater at DoorDash, I'd like to think, and I was like, no, you're going to go help them. Do this. I'm going to put everything on hold.
Right.
And, you know, I think there's not everyone has an advantage. And I think the companies are starting to evening the playing field and creating that advantage for everyone. So
absolutely.
I have the advantage of knowing you. One of my favorite moments of all time is still, besides all the times we've had at lunches and everything else, is just the Vegas trip where I've always wanted to think coming to stage. You just made me follow Maggie, as I recall. So that was
that was great. Act,
which is a member of their board, which everyone should follow. And one more thing about Maggie said, I like to quote her often. You're the one who introduced me to her, which is she doesn't pull anyone up. She just pulls people behind her and says, you know, she never left a job without finding five people to take that job. Back to Chris's point, maybe a final point. Be that person. Be one of those people that the person who's leaving their role wants to pull you into.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's a beautiful kind of wrap. Anything else? Any closing thoughts for us, my friend?
No, but this was so fun. It went so fast. So, no, I really enjoy it. I do think, it's a great honor and a privilege to be able to work at a great company like HPE and to lead teams and, you know, to do what I can every day. So I'm happy to do it. And I'm happy to be here to share with you today.
Yeah. There was, I'm trying to blank on her name, but there was a leader that was in awe that once, I'll remind her as soon as we hang up the call, but she once told me this great story. I've repeated it many times. I'll let you go, but this is so perfect for you. There was the titans of Silicon Valley were sitting around a table. They were at a summit. It was like 1950s. And everyone said, what's your greatest resource? And everyone said, oh my God, our technology, our, you know, the thing we're producing, yada, yada. And the leaders, the founders of HPE were like, are people?
Are
and people? I went, I always like to think that they're the only ones still standing.
Yeah,
they're the only ones still standing.
True. It's true. It was the technology, the patents, everything. And but they said it was our people.
So, I love that story. And there you go. And what a perfect person to help be one of their people leaders. So I thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Awesome. Jennifer Hill, you were missed. I've had more technical difficulties than I've known what to do. So Kristen Major was an amazing co-host today. So thank you for my co-host. Maybe we can make this a thing in case Jennifer.
I'd be happy to. Right.
I miss you, my friend. Lunch in Palo Alto one of these days.
Definitely. All right. Take care. Thank you, everyone. All right. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.